Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game on this Wednesday. The Nashville Cats, we've been talking about them quite a bit as they're making their return, and we are very, very excited about our next guest. In studio with us, legendary voice, Eli Gold.
Hello. Who is the voice,
very well done. He was the voice of the Nashville Cats, of course. You heard him in NASCAR, Alabama. He's done the AFL before, and you know, he did a year with the Nashville Predators as well.
Yes, sure did. Good to see you. You know, I should say it's good. I've been on with you guys so many times over the years. It was easier on telephone. I didn't have to look at your faces. But no, it's great to be here, and I appreciate it. And it's I know things are going well for the station and for your show in particular, so congrats.
Well, thank you, and obviously things going well for the Predators. You know, Pete Weber and Willie.
Some finish last night too.
Oh, it was awesome.
Good Lord Almighty! Yeah, that was a great finish.
As someone that has done play-by-play, you know, Pete obviously is a legend in his own right, and people have asked us all day, you know, play the clip of the overtime. When you're in a moment like that, whether it's the end of a football game or into a hockey game or whatever, you don't script that. It naturally happens.
Exactly. You can't script it. The only thing I will tell you, in a case of a football game, if there is a timeout preceding a big play, and you know that this is, you know, 3 seconds on the clock, if they score, they win, whatever, I do have a moment to say to myself, look, don't screw this up.
Yeah.
Because this is going to live on in the archives forever. It'll be on ESPN radio. It'll be on the game. It'll be on everybody's, you know, airwaves. But no, normally, you know, in the case of Alabama, you know, Tua to Devontae Smith against Georgia, you know, Bama had just taken a sack and everybody was, you know, emotionally, we were lower than whale dung. And then the next thing you know, I cleaned that up for your benefit.
Thank you very much.
And in the next play, Bama wins the national championship. So, no, you have no time to script anything. You just open your mouth and pray that your experience brings something out that makes sense.
How much do you kind of look back and think about whether it's a race, a game, or whatever, in some of those legendary – like you said, that – those legendary calls that live forever.
I've been blessed. I really have. I, you know, I really don't know of any that I blatantly screwed up. I don't. And I'm not saying that anything other than it's true. I've just been very, very lucky. I tell people I'm a professional describer.
Yeah.
All right? I'm a professional describer.
Right.
So if you just describe what you see, well, then you're okay. And then the thing is, what do you say to sum it all up? You know, and in the case of when Bama played Texas for the national championship at the Rose Bowl Stadium back a number of years ago, we all realize that back in the 1920s, going back before a lot of people listening now were even alive, back in the 1920s, Southern football was nothing. You know,
right.
The power was on the West Coast. And then Alabama gets on the train, goes out to Pasadena, and wins. And then they do it again on the West Coast and win. And they bring back, you know, some of that power with them. So Alabama has just defeated Texas for the national championship. And I wanted to tie it together somehow. And I had thought about it in the shower that morning. It's true. And ladies, close your eyes. But no, it's I thought about it in the shower that morning, just a general idea. And then come game time, as it turned out, Bama wins. And I said, and the roses in this grand old stadium are once again crimson.
Ooh.
Oh. And, you know, where does that come from? Who the heck knows? It just comes out of the crap that rattles around in my brain.
Ah, that's beautiful, though. Eli Golden Studio with us. We'll talk about Nashville Cats in a moment, but my man Chase here is a huge Dale Earnhardt fan.
Right.
So I'm going to ask a question for him that he wanted to ask. I mean, I know you've got a plethora of Dale Earnhardt stories.
We worked together forever, yeah. Dale was a great, great guy, and my wife might have been his biggest fan, but In those days, I did 41 years with NASCAR, and that was right during his arrival and right through his passing. And you know, he was a wonderful guy. He was the general public didn't know the real Dale Earnhardt, like the general public doesn't know the real Nick Saban.
Yeah,
there are people who, you know, have a persona as opposed to their real stuff. Dale was a great guy, cared about you so much. But, yeah, he was not afraid to rough it up on the racetrack and, you know, put Terry Labonte in the wall at Bristol or whatever it might have been. But Dale was an absolute – he could feel the wind. This man could feel the wind when he was in a car. He knew what was going on all around him, and he could compensate one of the most talented drivers in the history of the sport.
Is his legacy, had he lived, Eli, would he be as powerful as he is today? Because our memories make him seem larger than life when they usually are. But how would it factored out had he?
That's a good question. You know, a lot of the legacy, unfortunately, came as a result of his passing away.
Right.
And that legacy being the improvement in safety features in the NASCAR race cars and the head and neck restraints and things of that nature. A lot of those, unfortunately, might have happened at a different time, at a different date, because somebody else lost their lives. But him being as big as he is, you know, when Peter Jennings in those days leads the nightly news, or Tom Brokaw, whomever in those days, leads the nightly news with a NASCAR stock car driver losing his life,
yeah,
you realize quite then how big he really was on a national basis. So I would expect he would still have won many a championship, and he would probably go down as the winningest driver if he had stayed healthy and, you know, bypassing Richard Petty's numbers. But so much of his legacy has to do with the safety of the sport today.
Yeah, amazing. All right, you did Alabama football for how many years?
36.
All right, and so now you're at home and you get a phone call. Greg Pogue call you? How do you get this Nashville Cats job? Because I got to tell you, Eli, when Chase told me that they were hiring you, it just put like this amazing, I don't know, this wonderful at cherry on top of this great Nashville Cats pie with you.
Thank you.
How'd you get the job?
Actually, well, I had called him. I've known Pogi for years.
Right.
But I called him and said, hey, Alabama just cut me loose after 36 years. He said, why would they do that? I said, well, all they said is we've decided to go in a different direction. I said, whatever the heck that means. Well, in the span of literally 2 hours, he got with his ownership group. One of the ladies is an Alabama graduate, which didn't hurt, I'm sure. But, you know, within a couple of hours, they called back and said, all right, let's do it. And then Greg sent me an email the next day or 2 days later, whatever, lining up, well, here's what we can pay. It's a first-year operation again, and so on and so forth. And but here's what we can do. Here's what this, meal money, hotels, airfare, the whole bit. And I said, let's do it. And it was that quickly.
That's great.
And then Jacksonville State University in the state of Alabama, they won a bowl game last year.
Great.
They're coached by Rich Rodriguez. They called me, and their athletic director, Greg Seitz, and he said, you have any plans yet? I said, no, unless you want to hire me. He said, you're hired. Literally. That's how that happened. So within, honest to goodness, within 2 to 3 hours of being cut loose by Alabama, I had two other jobs. And
that's great.
And they're wonderful people. And I say that not because I'm on the radio or I'm here in Nashville, but they are genuinely nice people at both locations, Jacksonville State and here with the Nashville Cats. And it's a wonderful opportunity. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
Great.
He is the great Eli Gold in studio with us. We'll have more with him coming up next here on the Chase and Big Joe Show, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase and Big Joe here on this Wednesday, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Hanging out in studio with the great Eli Gold, as he is now the voice of the Nashville Cats. And I know you've done Cats games before. You've done AFL games before.
Back in the last incarnation, or probably two incarnations ago, TNN, which for whom I did NASCAR for a while, the Nashville Network, they had a Thursday night game of the week of the Arena Football. It was myself, Charles Davis, who's now on CBS. When Charles wasn't available, Ed Cunningham, the former offensive lineman, he was my color man. Sam Weitsch was one of my color men. And Jill Arrington was our sideline reporter. So, so I did Arena Football for a number of years on TNN. Then NBC got the rights, and they were kind enough to hire me, and I worked with John Riggins as my color man. Yeah, and we did those games. But yeah, many times we would come into Bridgestone. It wasn't called that at the time. It wasn't had another name, but we'd come in here and do games here, or catch the Cats on the road, or whomever. We did games for everybody. But yeah, I loved the Arena Football League. It's the first game I ever did. We did a preseason game, not on the air. It was a dry run for everybody because none of us had ever done it. And I got off the air and I said, "Man, I got to find myself an oxygen tent. Yeah. I mean, I got to get myself a little breathing room here." So yes, it's been a lot of fun. And I've always enjoyed it. And now that it's coming back, and, you know, the Cats were always one of the most successful franchises.
Yeah.
Pat Sperduto was the coach. He had some
Pat.
Yeah, some outstanding players on the roster in those days. So when I heard that the Cats were coming back and this all timed out the way it did, I'm happy to be here.
Fantastic. I'm getting from a lot of my friends want to know your recollection, and it wasn't a great moment in Alabama history, but the kick six that you're on the call.
The
Auburn,
kick
Alabama.
Six was, you know, it depends on how you phrase the question. I'm serious.
Yeah.
When people say, what was one of your favorite games? Well, that certainly was not a favorite game.
Right.
That game, heck, it sucked. I mean, it was awful. But one of your most memorable? Well, certainly that was one of the most memorable. I just called it as I saw it. You know, this one nearly made the tackle, and then it was Vogler, our tight end, nearly made a tackle. And then I looked up and I said, and there's nobody back for Alabama.
Ugh.
And touchdown Auburn. Well, now the interesting thing is, though, I you know, you wonder then you say to yourself, well, how did I do on that call? But we never played it back, of course. It was not a highlight on the Alabama network. We did not even use it on the postgame show because it was still not a highlight for Alabama. Then I drove back to Birmingham from Auburn, and I deliberately didn't put on the radio and listen to all these postgame shows. I was pissed off, pardon my French.
It's all right.
And I get up the next morning early, and I had a flight to Las Vegas to do the NASCAR banquet. I was doing the broadcast of the NASCAR banquet that week. It was Sunday. I had a Tuesday talk show out there and other stuff. So I was dog tired. So I fell asleep, wake up somewhere over Kansas or wherever the heck I woke up, and of course with the available IP and internet on the airplane, I said, well, let's see if I can find the call. And somebody had assembled all of the calls from that play. There was Vern's call on CBS, the late Rod Bramlett doing the call for Auburn, and my call on the Alabama network. And all three of our calls were ideal. They were perfect for our respective audiences. Rod had them going, you know, 40-30. They're not going to stand. They're not going to keep them off the field. And And Vern was, of course, calling it for the benefit of everybody from Maine to Maui and everywhere in between. And he was perfect, putting a caption on a picture. And I just you know, I called it and I said, now there's nobody back for Alabama. Touchdown Auburn. And that was it. So all of our calls were memorable and correct. But, you know, it was not a, you know, it's kind of like going back to that Georgia-Alabama national championship game. People say, was that the greatest game you've ever seen? I'll say, no, I said, the game stunk. Alabama trailed all day. They couldn't do anything. Jalen Hurst couldn't move the team. This wasn't happening. The game stunk. Now, the finish.
Yeah,
right. Well, that was great. Yeah. That was great. You know, kind of like last night with the Predators. It was not a spectacular game, trailing all night to Las Vegas. And then next thing you know, you win in overtime. Well, the finish was great, but it was not a great game.
Fantastic.
Top to finish.
But how many times that is that the case, though? I mean, that is the case a lot of times where it's like we recognize these iconic moments in sports. The game, like the Music City Miracle here.
Sure.
The game wasn't very good.
No. But
it was kind of a boring game. But the finish, that's what everybody talks about.
That's it. But, that is what everybody talks about. But that was a memorable day. Memorable. Favorite? No. Memorable? Yes.
Greatest NASCAR race you called?
Oh, brother. Whew. Goodness gracious. Well, from a selfish standpoint,
that's fine.
It was my first Daytona 500 because that, to me, legitimized my right to being there.
Yeah,
I said, if NASCAR and Motor Racing Network, if MRN was bringing me to do the Daytona 500, I must be decent at what I'm doing. So that was impressionable for me. As far as the, I mean, there have been so many. I couldn't even begin to pick one race. I mean, there are finishes at Darlington and Talladega. You know, Dale Earnhardt, the pass in the grass with Bill and Bill Elliott and all of these guys who did stuff. I don't know.
But that's good, though. That you got so many, it's hard to pull from one.
The stories, you know. I did write a book, and a lot of it was about NASCAR. It's just amazing the stuff I saw, and how nice the drivers were.
Yeah.
It was really, really wonderful.
What year was your first 500?
1977, I believe. They hired me in 75. It would be 78. They hired me in 75. They didn't use me at all that season. They used me in 76 for part of the schedule in 77. So 78, the Daytona 500 at 78 would be my first.
Was that one of Richard's, or who won that one?
You know, I knew you were going to ask me that, and I can't.
Because 79 was the memorable one, the fight and everything.
Yes, Bobby and Donnie, and you know, and Bobby Allison was kept saying, he goes, I don't know, he said, Cale Yarborough's fist kept hitting my chin, and he said, but it was, but yeah, there were some great races. But to say that you know which ones I really loved were the first wins for certain people.
Sure.
And the race otherwise might have been nondescript. But when Lenny Pond won at Talladega, when Phil Parsons won there, when Bobby Hillen got his first win. And it has nothing to do with friendships or anything. Just, you know, I knew what that meant to those guys.
Sure.
So those were some very memorable broadcasts for me. Of course, the one when, you know, the president was on with us. You know, and
84.
And Ned Jarrett spoke with Ronald Reagan. And, you know, there have been so many very special special broadcasts. And I had the pleasure of working with the great Barney Hall, who was the voice of NASCAR as far as I'll always be concerned. And I remember Barney, we were talking about, I don't know how the conversation came up, but we were talking about horse racing. We juxtaposed into somebody, one of the drivers must have been part owner of a horse or something, I forget. And Barney says on the air, he says, you know, I went to the horse track not too long ago. There was a horse there by the name of Eli Gold. I said, get out of here. He goes, yeah. He said he went off at 20-1. came back at 2:45.
1978, Cale Yarborough sat on the pole. Buddy Baker led the most laps.
Yes,
Bobby Allison won the race.
Yes, and Cale, he flipped in the in turn four in qualifying, if I'm not mistaken, that same year in the Hardee's car. So, or was that the Busch? One of the, whatever it was, just
probably the Hardee's car.
Yeah, just some great, great. Some great memories.
That's
there sure were.
Fantastic. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, so much fun.
We think the world of you and the Nashville Cats
thank
hit a
you.
Home run.
You're very,
baseball
very kind.
Term, but it doesn't matter. It applies here. Thank
I'm looking
you, Eli.
Forward to it and hope everybody comes up and sees us at Municipal Auditorium. And if you see me sitting there in the stands, just come by and say hey.
Yeah, love it.
We will for sure. He is the great Eli Gold. That is going to do it for us. Caroline Willie and D-Mace coming up next here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.